Welcome to the Journal of Biophilic Design podcast. Well, many thanks for joining us on the Journal of Biophilic Design today. We are going to be discussing how mass timber has the potential to transform construction. We're joined by Andrew Waugh. Andrew is co-founder and director of Waugh Thistleton Architects, a London-based architectural practice and world leaders in engineered timber and pioneers in the field of tall timber buildings. They've won lots of awards and have a deserved reputation in the field of sustainable architecture and design. We're going to also be talking about one of his most iconic buildings, the Black and White Building in London, among other things. And obviously biophilic design is all about using more sustainable materials, and with building operations and construction accounting for nearly 40% of global energy-related CO2 emissions, does mass timber have the potential to transform constructions? So, Andrew, first of all, many thanks for joining us today.
Hi there, nice to see you, Vanessa.
Well, can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, please, and what you got you interested in architecture in the first place?
Yeah, certainly. Isn't it sad? Just about your introduction, you know, Vanessa, it's still sad that it's actually that sustainable design is a field on its own. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That it's not actually incorporated into everything that we do in architecture, everything that we think about in construction. So I started the practice with my best friend from college, just pretty much straight after we left college. And we've been going 25 years. And we built our first engineered timber building, so mass timber building, in 2003. And so since then, we've built 30 odd buildings. We have projects now throughout Europe and in the US, as well as in the UK. We do lots of research, so horizon projects for the European Union. We work for the US Department of Agriculture, Network Rail, Department for Education, really looking at how we can begin to transform our industry into a low carbon industry, how we can start to think about architecture and, you know, and the materials we use, the processes of construction, and how we can think about those in a low carbon way.
That's fantastic. What got you interested in architecture? What was the
architecture? Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, I was brought up in Milton Keynes.
Oh really? Okay.
And, yeah. I think that probably had a lot to do with it. And you know, I spent my kind of teenage years rampaging through building sites and working on building sites. And I guess, you know, when I was a kid, it was all fields. And then by the time I was a teenager, it was built. Mm. And so I guess I kind of saw the art of the possible in front of me.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it just became, and also, you know, I was really into Lego. You know, one of those people that likes to do maths and draw. So I guess, yeah, you know, it was a kind of foregone conclusion. But I'm, you know, I wanted to be an architect from when I was really pretty small.
Yeah.
You know, as long as I can remember.
Well, I'm glad you went into it, because you're really making a fantastic positive impact, and you're inspiring. You know, this sort of new generation as well that's coming through that can see that you can build better and differently, and with beauty as well. And I think that's the important thing, that awe factor. Before we go anywhere, can you sort of explain to people, I mean, there will be architects and there'll be people on here who probably have a little understanding, maybe a great understanding, but I think most people might not completely understand what a engineered, or as you said, you know, a mass timber building.
Yeah, sure. So engineered timber is any kind of timber, any kind of sawn wood that you get and that you apply an engineered process to. So that's like glulam is the most famous example of that. So anybody that's kind of like done backstroke in a 1970s swimming pool and has seen these massive kind of like timber yellow beams above them, that's glulam. That's been around for 100 years or so. But in the 90s, the Austrians came up with a new form of engineered timber called cross-laminated timber, which is where you lay down planks of a European spruce, generally a European spruce tree, like a pine tree, and you lay those planks out, you spray them with an adhesive, like a kind of Copidex polyurethane adhesive, and then you lay another layer of planks perpendicular to the one below, and then you lay them up in odd layers so that the bottom layer and the top layer go the same direction, and then they have a sandwich in between them of numerous layers that are perpendicular to the ones above. So that's why it's cross-laminated. And then you have other things like different forms of plywood, different forms of chipboard, all those sorts of things that are kind of, you know, that are more useful in specific situations. So we use a lot of jumbo plywood, like called LVL, which is laminate veneer lumber. And we use a lot of that for beams and columns because it's particularly strong. But where we need mass, you know, to stop things bouncing or for acoustic separation, then cross-laminated timber has lots of mass in it. So we just try and use the most appropriate form of engineered timber, or even, you know, or even sawn timber for the job. Mm-hmm. And the way in which we kind of make that sort of distinction is based on structural performance, it's based on cost, but it's also based on resource. So we always try and use as little timber as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously, like, I think with for instance, the black and white building, which we're going to talk about, mm-hmm. has a lot of space inside, and I think that's just what you're saying, isn't it? If you're using the right timber for the construction or the support beams, if you want, I mean, for want of a better word, you can create these almost like halls, I suppose, that you can then subdivide if you want to create, you know.
No, absolutely. And you know, we've used in that project, we've used a hardwood LVL, which is incredibly strong. Yeah. So it's pretty much as strong as concrete in terms of its dimensional width and in compression. So it's really, really strong. And we use that as the frame. I mean, the other reason why we like using veneer-based engineered timbers is that they use nearly all of the tree. So if you imagine that to make a veneer, you put the tree trunk on a big spiralizer and you spin the tree trunk really, you know, really fast, and out comes a 3 millimeter thick layer of timber for hundreds of meters. And then you chop that up, stack that up, and that's your beam, that's your column. So they're incredibly efficient use of timber and very strong. Okay. So use that for the beams and the columns.
So obviously we're going to be talking about the sustainable aspect of it. I mean, there's probably people here whose ears might prick up when you said polyurethane and sort of the glue and all this stuff. And but I mean, ultimately, this is a sustainable practice, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, I guess of the whole practice, the polyurethane adhesives are the least perfect part of it. I mean, I would say that in CLT, the amount of adhesive in a piece of CLT is less than 1% of the CLT. And if you think about the practices that it's replacing, the use of sand, you know, because, and don't forget, in concrete, you're using, it's not just concrete, it's steel as well, because it's got reinforcement in it, you know, where that steel's coming from, where the aggregates are coming from, how the cement is made. So yeah, the adhesive is not perfect, but it's not, you know, it's not poisonous, it's not off-gassing, but it is a plastic. So, you know, so we're attentive to that as well. But in terms of the trees that we use, they are all from sustainably managed forests. They're all forests that are planted with an understanding of biodiversity. They're not monocultured forests. They're forests that are planted with FSC or PEFC licensed forests. So, and we go to the forests and we have a look at them. And certainly in Europe, a beech tree, for instance, is the second most forested tree in Europe. You know, and they were planted in the 50s and the 60s initially for furniture use. Yeah. But now, thanks to IKEA and others, we don't use the same amount of beech for furniture. And so, unfortunately, most of it gets burnt.
Oh, no.
For biomass, for renewable energy sources. But, you know, our forests in Europe have been growing year on year since the 70s in terms of the area. And we're certainly using nowhere near the amount of harvest that is available to us every year. So these are stocks that are kind of growing and replenishing. So we keep a careful eye on it, and we talk to foresters, we talk to sawmills, but this is, you know, in comparison to what the other materials, how other building materials are, you know, are kind of sourced, then this is definitely a much better alternative. Obviously, the best thing to do is not knock down buildings and to build as few buildings as we possibly can. You know, just build the buildings that we actually need. But
I think like you're right. I mean, the whole, if you look at what goes into a normal building, if you want, you know, I don't even know what percentage it must be. It's probably like 96% of buildings probably are still concrete and stuff, and the pollution
absolutely.
and the CO2
Absolutely.
that comes off of that. I mean, you know, I think anything that we can do, you know, like right now, I mean, ultimately that glue will be replaced with something anyway. But as you say, it's only a small 1% in the great grand scheme of things, and the more positive impact that you're having is a greater win, I think, for
No,
the
definitely. I
planet
think so. I
and
mean, I think
people's
that
health.
you don't, you know, you don't let perfect get in the way of good, you know? So
Got to start somewhere. Exactly.
we
Absolutely.
have to start change. And I think that, you know, the more voices that encourage the adhesive manufacturers to make a bio-based glue, fantastic. You know,
Absolutely.
let's get researching.
And obviously from our point of view, you know, sort of biophilic design point of view, the more wood we can see and, you know, the sort of textures and the tactile nature of them, and the acoustics as well, the acoustic benefits of wood. I mean, I think that's a really important thing. I mean, can you sort of explain a little bit about maybe some of the benefits actually of having a
Yeah, definitely.
timber
I mean, I
building?
think the health and well-being benefits are something that we're really only just beginning to fully realize, that we're only just beginning to talk about properly. And I think that, as you say, you know, these are numerous. You know, we know that there's a better acoustic. We know that, you know, having a hygroscopic material that will take up moisture and release moisture is really good for us. You know, good for us to be around. There are other, you know, there are other theories which I think really need to be kind of discussed further, such as somebody was telling me the other day that actually one of the calming properties that timber has is the irregularity of a kind of a piece of sawn timber, where the knots are, everything else, because the human eye is always looking for pattern and for order. If you look at something which has no discernible pattern, no discernible order, it's a sort of relaxing thing to be able to do, because you're not trying to kind of look for, you know, assess where the series of that order might appear. And so I think that there are lots of things we don't fully understand about it yet. And I think, but one thing that we all know is that being surrounded by natural materials is good for us. You know, and that should make sense. I mean, it makes sense with the clothes that we wear, you know, so, and the food that we eat. So why wouldn't that extend to the, you know, to the shelter that we provide for ourselves, for our offices, for our schools? You know, we hear things from teachers in schools made of timber. They say that it's a really calming influence on the children, that they're much more productive, that they have better concentration. We hear from research done in Germany and Austria from office workers that people have lower blood pressure, that they have lower stress levels, that they take less time off sick. You know, similarly, people who sleep in timber buildings sleep longer and sleep more soundly. So there are all these things. I mean, you know, and definitely there's lots more research needed in this, but I think that, you know, common sense tells us immediately that these things, you know, have an element of truth. And what we need to find out is really is to see how that kind of bears out.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk the same thing as well. We talk about fractal patterns and patterns of nature and things, and there is nothing regular in nature, and so therefore our brains look for that, like they look for the non-patterns, if you want, you know, so we feel happy
Absolutely.
when we're surrounded by
Absolutely.
that irregularity. Absolutely. And also the wood, we know that we add up better and more creative, and all these things that are evidence-based. So and I think as well, when you enter into a building that is made of wood, you know, that's got this thing, there's something that's almost like this sort of primal connected happiness. If you want, it's like an
No,
understanding,
definitely.
you know, and the smell as well. It's like there's just the acoustic properties. It's like the smell of the wood, and it was really lovely how you said about the sort of humidity kind of aspect, how it absorbs and takes the sort of temperature change and all this kind of thing. I think it moves with us. It's a living, ultimately, that's it, isn't it? They feel like they're alive, don't they? They feel like it's living rather than a grey piece of concrete,
Definitely.
which is
And
dead.
I've lived in my house, which is made of cross-laminated timber. I've lived in that house for 12 years now. And every spring you can smell the wood again. It kind of seems to kind of like have a fresh burst of kind of like, and we had some work done on it recently, and we moved into a friend's house around the corner, which is kind of really beautiful building, but made of concrete, very architecty, exposed concrete everywhere. And within about 2 or 3 days, we'd all dried out like prunes. We'd kind of like running down to Boots to buy loads of moisturizer to slap all over ourselves, because we just kind of found that we were just like, totally different atmosphere. It had begun to kind of really take a physical effect on us. But
Yeah.
really interesting.
It is,
Really
isn't it?
interesting.
Things you don't even think about. It's more than just the aesthetics. There's actually like the physical health benefits of having these timber spaces. I mean, maybe we can talk about the black and white building in London. I mean, maybe I know it's a co-working place that people can go and have a look at. I'll put
Yeah,
the
absolutely. You can walk into the
link
reception area and have a gawk. It's
in.
in central London in Shoreditch, and it's a 6-story office building, 50,000 square feet. It was built for Blackstone, a global investor. So, I mean, this is another thing that's important for us, is to ensure that this move towards low carbon construction, low carbon architecture, is not a peripheral occupation. This is not just for bird watching centres and National Trust museums. This is, this has to be mainstream. And so building for Blackstone has been a real treat. They were a great client, and also just kind of ensuring that you're getting that maximum outreach of the kind of story that you're trying to tell about what the opportunities are for this type of building. And so the entire building above the ground floor slab is made of timber. So it's timber staircases, timber lift shafts, timber beams, columns, floor slabs, external wall, curtain walling is timber, and the external cladding is timber as well. So a completely timber building. It was built very quickly in 83 weeks. So
Really?
very fast construction. It was cost equivalent to concrete, so we were obliged to track the cost of the building all the way to tender with the main contractor against a concrete equivalent building, and we were able to demonstrate that it was cost equivalent. So fast, inexpensive, and is letting extremely well, so the client's very happy, which is really nice.
That's it though, isn't it, as well? We talk about, we were, you know, in biofield design, we talk about health, well-being, but actually ultimately also it improves prosperity, improves real
Yeah,
estate value, all that kind
absolutely.
of thing. And people want to come to work as well, I should imagine. And when you mentioned about the school,
Yeah.
the kids love it and things, I mean, you must get really positive feedback from
We
I
do. It's been
yeah.
incredible. We've had about, we've shown more than 2,000 people around the building in
Really?
the last 18 months. And the level of interest and excitement about the building is really fabulous. It's really gratifying. And I think that, I think one of the things that it's able to do as a project as well is to demonstrate that low carbon construction, a more sustainable form of architecture, can be one that is forward looking, can be one that is sort of, joyous and kind of creates happy spaces that people want to be in. And one of my bugbears has always been that when people talk about sustainability in architecture, there's kind of, there's a bit of a kind of hair shirt mentality that goes on around it. It has to be sort of a bit of a Moseley type building. It needs to be kind of bland and a bit chewy. It can't, and I think that we can demonstrate with this building that it's actually, a great place to be in, a great place to work in, and it does all the things that, or any other contemporary office building does, and more.
And this has to be on the agenda. And I think what I really love about the
Absolutely.
building is that it's a brilliant example. It's accessible as well. Like you say, people can come in and have a look. I mean, you, immediately as you approach the building, you're greeted by that timber facade. These kind of I mean, I'm going to say a trellis for other a thing, but it's there's like sort of drapes of a sort of fingers of timber that come down and.
It's solar shading. So it's solar shading that's designed to reduce the amount of sunshine that comes into the building in the summer, but to maximize the amount of sunshine that comes into the building in the winter. So yeah. it's a solar shading on the outside of the building, and that reduces our heating and cooling bill by a third, having that on the outside of the building. So really, you know, the building utilizes a lot of passive means of dealing with climate. So passive means of cooling and of ensuring the building stays warm as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the building stays warm. You must be, because it is clad in timber, because it is that. Is that the main sort of dynamic to?
Yeah, and it, you know, we use. I mean, one of the things that I find exciting about this method of construction is that it relies on and works with the most up-to-date kind of digital tools. Okay. So we're using really sophisticated architectural modeling software in order to be able to model exactly how much solar shading goes on the outside of the building. And so the solar shades, the depth of the solar shades, the frequency of the shading, and the orientation, whether it runs vertically or horizontally, is different across the whole building. So 16 different forms of solar shade across the building, which just kind of slowly kind of mold from one to another as the sun kind of moves around the building. So just utilizing that kind of software, you know, allows us to articulate the building in a really sophisticated way, and allows us to use these natural materials in the most efficient way. So we have, if you imagine, you know, that we built the whole building off of the pavement in the front, because there's no access to the building. It's completely landlocked apart from the pavement. So everything came by truck, was picked up by the crane, and dropped into place. So 893 pieces of timber. And each one has a QR code on the back, person with a QR code reader on site, crane lifts it up, put exactly into place, and screwed down into place. So that's why it's so fast and so quiet, so clean.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about that. I mean, if you go past most building sites, it's a racket, it's like cacophony, and yeah. I can imagine that this is a positive impact as well, isn't it?
No, absolutely. That kind of noise pollution that you get from construction sites, you know, the endless kind of stream of cement trucks coming to site. We built the whole building on 70 deliveries. The entire structure of the building on 70 deliveries. So it's really, really kind of much, much reduced. It's in terms of noise, as I was saying before, it's much faster as well. And because everything's prefabricated, because it's cut to size before it arrives to site, we don't have all that site waste.
Yeah.
You know, more than half of our landfill in London is construction waste. Don't have any, yeah, it's appalling. We don't have any. There's no skips on site. You know, there's a wheelie bin in the corner. So that's really great as well. You know, and far fewer plastics as well. Yeah. So a lot of the buildings, you know, with concrete buildings, you know, there's a massive use of plastic in those buildings, and that's another thing that we really try and reduce the use of as well, so that we're really promoting the notion of our buildings being able to kind of breathe.
Yeah. That's beautiful. And it must be better for the construction workers as well. It must be.
Oh, yeah, they love it.
Yeah.
It's so much nicer to walk around a kind of timber building site. You know, you've got no gloves, no mask, no goggles necessary, right? So you're not working with a toxic material. You're working with a material that kind of smells really nice. You know, there's no kind of banging and grinding and, you know, all that macho crap that goes on in a concrete site. This is all about precision. Yeah. You know, so it's all about plus or minus a couple of millimeters, cordless screwdrivers. You know, the loudest thing you hear on site is that kind of zip, zip sort of noise of the cordless screwdrivers around the site. And the other thing that we do as well is we talk to people about what we're doing and why we're doing it. So we always, you know, make sure that we're not kind of, you know, we don't take anybody for granted in this process. It has to, when you do something new, it has to be completely a collaborative process, right? And that includes the people that are building these buildings with you. So we talk to them about why we're doing it. We talk to them about the kind of ambition, the low carbon nature of the construction. And we get real buy-in, real enthusiasm from the people on site. It's honestly, I know I sound like a evangelical preach or something, but it's completely different. It really is.
Yeah.
Great. It's a great process to be part of.
Yeah, really. You mentioned schools and obviously Department of Education, and are you finding the uptake that you're sort of, there's a greater understanding
Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there. I mean, it's frustrating in the UK because, you know, our sustainability, our legislation around sustainability and carbon in construction is so poor.
Yeah.
It's so meager compared to other European countries, you know, compared to other European cities in London, you know, which is really, really frustrating, frankly.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. You know, even in the US, there's more ambition around sustainability than there is in the UK. And so, you know, architects just as guilty, unfortunately, as the rest of the industry in really just seeing sustainability as something of an additional practice, you know, as an add-on. You know, we can do what we've always been doing as long as we put a solar panel on the roof,
yeah,
or, you know, put some, I don't know, whatever, put a windmill on it. You know, it's, and it needs to be far more of a kind of paradigm shift than that. You know, it needs to be far more of a kind of a whole scale understanding that, you know, climate change is a massive calamity facing humanity. We all need to be doing everything in each of our own individual practice to be able to better that situation as much as we can, mitigate that situation. You know, so architects have real agency in this situation. You know, there's a lot that architects can do. So it is frustrating.
Yeah.
Did you ask if it was frustrating? Sorry, is that me venting? It's just me venting.
I can feel your frustration. I'm frustrated for you. I feel frustrated for the planet.
It's annoying. It's just kind of like, you know, this is something that actually we could really get hold of as an industry. And I think that is something that architects could really get hold of and demonstrate value within the industry, you know, this kind of leadership. Unfortunately, it's not happening.
So what does need to happen? I mean, in an ideal world, what should we be doing? How should it change? Is it legislation? I mean, I know it's culture.
Yeah, it has to be legislation. It has to be legislation led, because otherwise it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, I think very few people are going to take a lead. And when you see people do taking a lead, everybody sort of stands back and, you know, claps and then keeps on doing the same thing. So I think that it has to be legislation. I think we have to have carbon taxes. I think that we have to promote a better use of trees. We have to build more wind farms. We need less biomass power generation so that we can utilize our forests properly. We need better forest management. We need investment into forest management. You know, and that would, all those sorts of policies would only just begin to catch us up with the rest of Europe.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to be done, but, you know, feels like we might have a new government. Feels like we've just got a new, you know, our mayor, hopefully in London, will have some slightly more ambitious targets now that they've been voted back in. So, you know, I mean, architects are always optimists, but I think that, you know, you need to move that on.
Yeah.
And you need to be an activist, not just an optimist. It's not enough to think things are going to be better. You have to make sure that they are.
Yeah. If people who are listening to this podcast, they're designers, there's architects, facility managers, there's a whole bunch of people, doctors and teachers and just families as well.
Sure.
If you were going to sort of give them a thing to say, go and do, or help support, or, you know, share the love, or what can they do if they're just going,
such a great question. I think?
Yeah.
Talk about it. Talk about climate change. It still has that kind of, you know, fun sponge kind of reputation. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, you're going to be the kind of like, you know, the party killer if you kind of start talking about it. And I think it's really important to make sure that these are issues that we talk about. You know, that these are issues of conversation that we all confront. And so don't be embarrassed to talk about it. Don't be embarrassed to ask questions about it. Might feel uncomfortable at first, but we just have to get it out there. You know, this is the way that we have dealt with other massive changes in society. And I think that this is how we need to begin to deal with climate change, is to begin to talk about it more and begin to address some of these problems. And a lot of the solutions around this are not glamorous. You know, they're about not building basements, or thinking if we can reuse a building rather than demolish it, or thinking about how we can take the materials from a demolition site and reuse them, about how we can use as little materials as possible in what we do. And, you know, this very frustrating kind of situation at the moment where there's sort of movement in architecture to talk about boring buildings or interesting buildings, you know, and the problem with ostentatious, loud buildings is that they take a lot of material to do that, to make that loud noise, to kind of like, to give, to be a kind of look at me building. That often requires a really inefficient use of materials and resources. And we need to be thinking carefully about what we use and why we use it, justifying the use of stuff. We need to use just what's necessary, just what's sufficient, and to celebrate that and to enjoy that. And so I think that championing that kind of thing as well is really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think too often the onus is put on the individual, right? Too often it's about, you know, being vegan or drinking oat milk or whatever it is. And now those things are important, and that's great if you can do that. But it's not, you know, it, you can't just stop there. You know, it really, that's not enough, especially for architects. That's just not enough, you know? And so we need to be talking and thinking and constantly debating about how we can do better.
It's really good to hear. So thank you for that. The World Economic Forum, I've got a note here, said they recently posted an article stating we can't tackle the climate change crisis without changing construction. And for me, I see biophilic design, you know, as a term, really trying to push through on different levels. We're trying to push in more wood, more natural materials, more natural airflow, the more passive house kind of principles, really. And it's kind of like a catch-all thing that some people can kind of can grasp.
You know, Vanessa, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's why I've set the journal up, so that people have a tool that they can then take and say, look at all this amazing stuff that's happening. And, you know, I think that positive messaging has to be a way forward. Like you say, the doom and gloom, we need to be doom and gloom. We need to balance it. We need to go, look, it's a disaster. We need to accelerate it now. But there are such amazing examples. And I think what you create are really lovely. Before we go, I did want to ask you, is there another building that you'd like to just like raise or maybe a couple, but something particularly that I can put a link to that people can go off and have a look? I'm obviously going to put a link to the black and white building, but is there somewhere that's like close to your heart, or that you think people would go, oh my word, that's just like how it feels? I know, do you? You have a minute to choose.
Oh my goodness. Let me think about that. Maybe we can put that in the notes afterwards. I'll have to think about it and I'll email you. Yeah. I would like to say about biophilia that I think that it's so important what you're doing. I think it's so important in the transition that we need to make as a society, but moreover as humanity. It's so important in that transition that we acknowledge the advantages of the transition, right? That we acknowledge that climate justice and social justice are intrinsically linked, and also that, you know, that a closer relationship with nature is something that we need to get to in all of the things that we use, and all of the kind of, you know, from food to shelter to clothing. These are all things that need to recognize those advantages in nature. And I think that, you know, the sustainable practice of a more bio-based material design, you know, is great for low carbon, but we also need to recognize the massive advantages that it has in terms of our health and well-being. So I think that the biophilic responses to those materials really are an integral part of the advantage of moving towards a low carbon future.
Thank you. Before I ask you the final question, Andrew, is there anything else you would like to add?
No, that was my ad. That was the thing that I was writing down to say through the talk. In terms of a kind of good building to see, what's a good building to see? Oh my goodness. There's so many lovely buildings to see. In terms of a good wooden building, don't have them in the UK.
No.
You know, we really don't. We're Yeah, I'm sorry.
The black and white one, is that the one that's the only one that you've done in the
It's the
UK?
most, no, we've done lots of others, but they're mostly housing, or private office buildings. So they don't have that kind of same public accessibility,
Oh, I see, yeah.
that the black and white building has. And, you know, it's also so obvious from the outside.
Yes.
So we have a book online
Okay.
called, which is a study of 100 UK CLT buildings
Okay.
called 100 projects UK CLT, and it's on thinkwood.com, and that's free to download, and that gives details of 100 buildings across the UK made of timber.
That's fantastic. I'll put a link to that on the spiel that goes with this
Great.
with this podcast.
Great.
Thank you. So my final question, Andrew, if you could paint the world with a magic brush of biophilia, what would it look like?
Oh my goodness. Well, I guess it has to look like the kind of, the buildings that we're aspiring to build as a practice. You know, it would look like, schools and hospitals that are kind of healthy and beautiful to be in, homes that are kind of healthy to live in, and offices that are healthy to work in, factories that are healthy to work in. I think that, natural daylight, natural materials, fresh air are something that we've lost from our buildings in the last 100 years. And this is something that, as I was saying before, alongside understanding how we build in a low carbon way, these are the things that we can aspire to for a better architecture for the future.
Thank you for listening to the Journal of Biophilic Design podcast.